Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, September 11th, 2017. An ICRC aid worker was killed in South Sudan late Friday.
All the activities in that area for now is put on hold until we understand what has been actually what happened and why did it happen.
And the commander of the group formerly known as the Arrow Boys is killed.
The evidence is also saying somebody sent the soldiers to go and they arrested him and they took him somewhere and later on the body was found.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. An international committee of the Red Cross aid worker was killed over the weekend in a former Western Equatoria state by unknown gunmen. The ICRC says it has suspended its operations in the area indefinitely after Friday on a convoy of the vehicles clearly marked with ICRC logo. The South Sudan Army blames rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar for the attack. Tito Justin has the story for VOA from Juba.
The International Committee of the Red Cross says driver Lukudu Kennedy Lucky Emmanuel was killed when an ICRC convoy of 9 trucks and a 4-wheel drive vehicle was shot at by unknown assailants. After the driver was shot, he lost control of the vehicle and died on the spot. ICRC spokesperson in Juba, Mary Aftat Matvat, says it's difficult for the ICRC to continue operating in the Western Equatoria region when armed men attack humanitarians in the area.
All the activities in that area for now is put on hold until we understand what has been actually what happened and why did it happen. Of course, the convoy was marked with the Red Cross emblem, which is our protection in areas of conflict, and we need to understand why it was not respected.
The convoy was returning from an assistant operation of food and seed distribution in the former Western Equatoria. The ICRC says before any travel in South Sudan, all parties to the conflict are notified about ICRC presence. Motivat says the warring parties must ensure that humanitarian workers can perform their duties.
The next time we go on these roads, that we are respected and the Red Cross emblem is respected. So we will, of course, as well encourage all parties not to attack humanitarian workers because it's important for us that we get access and safe passage to help the people in need in South Sudan.
Motivat says this marks the first deadly attack on an ICRC convoy since the conflict broke out in the country in late 2013. The International Committee of the Red Cross immediately condemned the incident and says it is shocked that someone would kill a staff member. The International Red Cross says it is assessing the implication of the killing before renewing operations in the area. The South Sudan Army blames the attack on rebels loyal to former first Vice President Riek Machar. Brigadier Lulu Rai Kong is the SPLA military spokesman.
Last Friday, remnants of SPLA IO forces operating in and around Kotopi area deliberately ambushed ICRC convoy. The convoy was returning from Yambio, where they delivered humanitarian supply to people there.
Machar's deputy military spokesman did not respond to repeated requests for comment. Friday's killing brings to 13 the number of aid workers killed in South Sudan so far this year. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says at least 80 aid workers have been killed in the line of duty in South Sudan since December 2013. More than 8 humanitarian convoys have been attacked this year. The UN warns that under international humanitarian law, intentional attacks against humanitarian relief personnel may constitute war crimes. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
A former rebel general and 4 of his bodyguards have been killed in Yambio town of Budwe State after fighting that broke out between government forces and the bodyguards of the rebel leader. General James Kabila is among the dead. Kabila was deputy commander of the South Sudan National Liberation Movement, or SSNLM, which used to be known as the Arrow Boys. Waki Simon Mudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Budwe state officials say fighting erupted at the Yambio home of General James Kabila between the general's bodyguards and SPLA Division 6 commander's bodyguards on Sunday. Budwe State Information Minister Gibson Wande says the SPLA commander, Colonel John Akumo, visited Kabila upon Kabila's invitation. Before his death, Wande said Kabila was wanted by Budwe State authorities for questioning on the death of a citizen who was murdered.
The government requested him to appear so that he can get a statement, but the process could not yield any fruits. So he objected the call. The governor of Budwe State also called him that let him come at least so that he can give some light into what happened last Sunday. But in response, he objected the call.
Wande says Kabila's forces began firing at SPLA forces when they arrived at Kabila's premises. While Wande says the fighting lasted only for 5 minutes, SSNLM Brigadier General Abel Matthew says the fighting went on for about 3 hours. The SSNLM and the government had been implementing a deal signed by both parties in April 2016. Wande denies government forces intentionally killed Kabila.
The evidence is also saying somebody sent the soldiers to go and they arrested him and took him somewhere, and later on the body was found. So those were what we had wanted to investigate and find out. So what showed to us, why did the commander refuse to respond if at all he was not part of the killing?
SSNLM General Matthew describes Kabila's killing as unfortunate, but says the incident is what he calls an individual matter. General Matthew says the SSNLM, including their party chairman, has been informed that Kabila was wanted by state authorities regarding the death of the private citizen. He says SSNLM will continue to honor the peace deal regardless of Kabila's death and those of his bodyguards.
The chairperson for the SSNLM was on ground, so we were informed that one person is supposed to be taken for investigation. And then we knew the whole situation, it was like a personal issue, so which has nothing to do with the government. It has nothing even to do with the agreement.
The SSNLM rebels went into the bush in former Western Equatoria State to fight government forces in 2015. The group was demanding equal representation for their sons and daughters from former Western Equatoria State in the National Army and other sectors of government, which they said had not happened in the past. The group signed a peace agreement in April last year with the government, although implementing that deal has been delayed. Matthew says military commanders should have full control of their forces to avoid further provocation actions.
Because we don't want to go into more things, and when things happen like that, we need to discuss it. And what we want only is, you know, I have forces, and then the government has forces. So each one should control his force.
Matthew says his movement has more than 3,000 forces, which are expected to be integrated into the National Army in the coming days. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The South Sudan Ministry of Foreign Affairs has summoned Michael Moro, U.S. President Donald Trump's newly appointed chargé d'affaires at the U.S. Embassy in Juba, over sanctions imposed last week on two government officials and South Sudan's former army chief, General Paul Malong, who is under house arrest. Foreign Affairs Undersecretary Bach Valentilo Akol-Wol says the government registered its protests in what he calls the strongest possible terms against the new sanctions. Bach says the Kiir administration is dismayed by what he calls the unwarranted action by the U.S. administration.
We felt this was unjust decision. It was unfair decision because it singled out only people from the government side while ignoring people from the armed opposition side. We also feel that these sanctions serve no purpose.
The U.S. Department of the Treasury sanctioned Information Minister and government spokesman Michael McQuay, Deputy Defense Chief Malek Rubin, and General Malong for obstructing peace efforts in South Sudan. Wol says the government of South Sudan will try to find a way to resolve the matter through diplomatic means with the government of the United States.
America still have an embassy in Juba and we have an embassy in Washington, D.C. But our point is that in bilateral relations, we need to treat each other fairly. Singling out three senior government officials for sanctions and ignoring members of the opposition, armed members of the opposition, send a wrong signal.
Ambassador Wolf says the Kiir administration hopes the Trump administration and members of the international community will continue working with the government of South Sudan.
To help the government in implementing the compromise peace agreement, to help the government in ensuring that the national dialogue is successful.
The South Sudan Foreign Affairs Ministry has asked Morrow to convey the protest to the U.S. government at his earliest convenience. The U.S. says all three men played a role in threatening the peace, security, and stability of South Sudan. Find out what the head of a multinational task force is doing to fight Boko Haram when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you want to do before you die?
I'd love to make a rememberable event for the whole country, for my country to know, as in to help like a very specific group of people who can remember at any time that I help them once in a while.
I want to have visited every country in Africa: Nigeria, Liberia, Togo, Cote d'Ivoire, Guinea, all of them. I really want to be there.
Okay, I would want to be successful so that I pay back my parents for what they have invested in me, and of course live a good life.
Now, before I die, I want to be a women activist and the voice for the vulnerable, whether through an already established organization or a CBO, or starting up my own organization.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The head of the multinational task force fighting Boko Haram says the war against militants is being won, but warned that suicide bombings remain a threat, killing close to 400 people in Nigeria and Cameroon since April. Modi Edwin Kinseka reports from the village of Budua in Cameroon.
Soldiers from the 7,800-person task force have been stationed in several towns and villages along the Nigeria-Cameroon border since those communities were liberated from Boko Haram a little over a year ago.
Mora! Mora!
The force's commander, Nigerian-born General Lucky Irabo, visited four communities along the border on Saturday to reassure local residents and rally the troops.
Boko Haram and other criminal gangs, their end has come. Boko Haram is on the downward trend. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
That alone should motivate you to know that the war has been won, and for it, you to give in the last ounce of your energy and your commitment so that they will be completely defeated. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Irabo ordered the soldiers to focus on stopping suicide bombers and told them to work more closely with local self-defense groups. He urged civilians to report anything or anyone suspicious. The Boko Haram conflict has displaced over 2 million people in four countries, but the governments of Nigeria and Cameroon are urging people to go home. General Irabo said the soldiers' presence in villages will keep Boko Haram from taking them back. However, security is not the only challenge the returnees face. Abubakar Buba, an elder of Budua village on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, pulls his thirsty donkey to a nearby stream. The 75-year-old returned home in August. He fled Budua after a Boko Haram attack in 2014. He says the loud sounds of bombs that destroyed their village mosque, killing several people, including their imam, also ruptured his eardrums. A soldier asked Buba how life has been in his village since he returned. Buba said he is poor and lives on food aid from well-wishers and neighbors. He says he hasn't seen his children since 2014, when they also fled. The village, once home to 200 people, is now inhabited by barely 70. The residents say they are hungry as the fighting has devastated farmland, leaving farmers unable to cultivate crops or take care of livestock. Cameroon's government has announced plans to provide seeds to farmers and financial aid to unemployed youths to start small businesses. But the people in this village say they are still waiting. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Budua, Cameroon.
Today is the 16th anniversary of the 9/11 terror attacks on the United States. President Trump led the nation today in remembering that fateful day and those that lost their lives.
We gathered here today to remember a morning that started very much like this one. Parents dropped off their children at school. Travelers stood in line at airports and getting ready to board flights. Here at the Pentagon and at offices all across the country, people began their early meetings. Then our whole world changed. America was under attack, first at the World Trade Center, then here at the Pentagon, and then in Pennsylvania. The horror and anguish of that dark day were seared into our national memory forever. It was the worst attack on our country since Pearl Harbor, and even worse because this was an attack on civilians, innocent men, women, and children whose lives were taken so needlessly.
Trump says America was changed forever on 9/11.
On that day, not only did the world change, but we all changed. Our eyes were opened to the depths of the evil we face. But in that hour of darkness, we also came together with renewed purpose. Our differences never looked so small. Our common bonds never felt so strong. The sacrifice grounds on which we stand today are a monument to our national unity and to our strength.
That was President Trump speaking today on the 16th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on the U.S. The International Committee of the Red Cross warns that the flow of weapons is at the highest levels since the end of the Cold War. It says that's contributing to violent extremism in the Middle East, Africa, and Asia, as well as organized crime. The ICRC issued the warning today in Geneva at the opening of the Arms Trade Treaty Conference. The treaty regulates the international trade in conventional arms and seeks to prevent and eradicate illicit trade and diversion of conventional arms. Dr. Kathleen Lawand is head of the organization's arms unit. From Geneva, she spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua.
Well, the big issue for us is unregulated arms transfers or poorly regulated arms transfers. That is where states continue to transfer weapons to parties to armed conflicts, that is the belligerents or fighters in wars, without regard for how those belligerents and fighters are behaving themselves, that is, whether they are respecting the rules of war, also known as international humanitarian law. And this is a big concern for us.
Now, this is not the first time the ICRC has looked at this issue. It did a study a number of years ago, I believe.
We carried out a study covering a range of states in several continents. This was 20 years ago. This was a study on arms availability and the protection of civilians in armed conflict. And the conclusions of that study still stand true today, very unfortunately. What we found in that study is that poorly controlled availability of weapons actually fuels conflicts and prolongs conflicts, but critically also facilitates violations of the laws of war. Also, the fact that too many weapons are available to violent extremist groups or other actors, be they state forces or non-state forces, that use the weapons in an undisciplined manner, this actually hinders our ability to bring humanitarian assistance because it increases the level of insecurity in these countries. So there has been for a long time now an urgency for states to introduce a level of responsibility in the arms trade. And this is what the arms trade treaty is all about.
What are some of the main hotspots that you see around the world where this problem is occurring?
Well, we see this today very much so in the Middle East, where very brutal conflicts are ongoing, either in Syria, Iraq, or Yemen. We see this also in Africa, in the Sahel region, where conflicts are raging, especially in the Lake Chad Basin region, as well as South Sudan. South Sudan today is just, I think, a very good example of where uncontrolled availability of weapons has very much fueled the horrific violence we are seeing there today. Today we have 6 million people in need of humanitarian assistance in South Sudan, nearly 2 million refugees, in addition to that, nearly 2 million internally displaced persons, all in need of assistance. The trouble is it's very difficult for the International Committee of the Red Cross and other humanitarian agencies to get to the people in need precisely because of the high degree of insecurity due to the uncontrolled availability of weapons, not just into the hands of armed groups, but also just civilians picking up weapons and using them. This is just fueling attacks against civilians, attacks against healthcare workers, attacks against humanitarian workers. And we ourselves have just lost a colleague in South Sudan very tragically 2 days ago. This has got to stop. We need to bring the arms trade under control.
And what are the chances of that happening?
Well, we have hope today because since 2013, there is now an international treaty, a global treaty called the Arms Trade Treaty, to which today nearly two-thirds of states have subscribed to in one form or another. The Arms Trade Treaty commits the states that have signed up to it to ensuring that the weapons that they export, that they transfer, do not make their way into the hands of those who would use them to commit violations of the laws of war.
Dr. Kathleen Lawand, of head of the Arms Unit at the International Committee of the Red Cross. From Geneva, she spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. Here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayan. An aid worker with the International Committee of the Red Cross was killed late Friday in former Western Equatoria State. The ICRC has condemned the killing and says it has suspended its operations in the area indefinitely after that attack. The South Sudan Army blames rebels loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar for the attack, but it is not clear who attacked the convoy. The ICRC says driver Lukudu Kennedy Laki Emmanuel was killed when 9 trucks and a 4-wheel drive vehicle were shot at by unknown assailants. When the driver was shot, he lost control of his vehicle, which then crashed. He died at the scene. The ICRC spokesperson in Juba, Marie Mortvet, says it is difficult for the ICRC to continue operating in a region where armed men attack humanitarians. Mortvet says all the trucks in the convoy were clearly marked as ICRC vehicles with the Red Cross emblem. The convoy was returning from an assistance operation of food and seed distribution in the former Western Equatoria State. A former rebel general and 4 of his bodyguards have been killed in Yambio town of Budwe State after fighting broke out between government forces and the rebel leader's bodyguards. General James Kabila was among the dead. Kabila was deputy commander of the South Sudan National Liberation Movement, or SSNLM, known previously as the Arrow Boys. Budwe state officials say the fighting occurred at General James Kabila's home. Budwe Information Minister Gibson Wandi says the SPLA commander visited Kabila upon Kabila's invitation. Wandi said Kabila was wanted by Budwe state authorities for questioning on the recent death of a citizen who was not identified by authorities. Wandi says Kabila's forces began firing at SPLA forces when they arrived at his home. While Wandi says the fighting lasted only 5 minutes, SSNLM Brigadier General Abel Matthew says the fighting went on for about 3 hours. The government signed a peace agreement with Kabila's group in 2016, but it had yet to be fully implemented. And finally, the South Sudan Ministry of Foreign Affairs today summoned Michael Murrow, the U.S. President Donald Trump's new chargé d'affaires at the U.S. Embassy in Juba, over sanctions imposed last week on two government officials and South Sudan's former army chief, General Paul Malong, who has been under house arrest for several months. Foreign Affairs Undersecretary Bach Valentino Acol Wall says the government registered its protest in what he calls the strongest possible terms against the new sanctions. Bach says the Kiir administration is dismayed by what he called the unwarranted action by the U.S. administration. The U.S. Department of the Treasury sanctioned Information Minister and Government Spokesman Michael McQuay, Deputy Defense Chief Malik Rubin, and General Paul Malong for obstructing peace efforts in South Sudan last Wednesday. Wall says the government of South Sudan will try to find a way to resolve the matter through diplomatic means with the government of the United States. Ambassador Wall says the Kiir administration hopes the Trump administration and members of the international community will continue working with the government of South Sudan. The U.S. says all three men played a role in threatening the peace, security, and stability of South Sudan. In the U.S. announcement, Malong is accused of starting the civil war. McQuay is accused of obstructing activities of international peacekeeping and humanitarian assistance in the country. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Mongoose by J.M. Kennedy.
Walolo Badi walele, badi lama ikadosia, miobo adosia, izi mungu nipoya, eh, katedwe warungo niti otolu mungu si, miobo adosia, izi mungu nipoya, katedwe warungo niti otolu mungu si, miobo adosia, matipila, izi mungu nipoya, eh, katedwe warungo Katro wazoniti, katro bakoniti, zimungu matia. Katro walioniti, katro wazoniti, katro bakoniti, zimungu matia. Ondwa konia, fizia konia, azia konia, mungu ni fera. Ondwa konia, fizia konia. Azia konia, mungu ni fera. Miobo adusia, izi mungu ni poya, eh. Katedwe warungo ni ti, otolu mungu si. Miobo adusia, izi mungu ni poya. Katedwe warungo ni ti, otolu mungu si.
We've been listening to J.M. Kennedy with the song Mungusi. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'd like to hear how you feel about the show. You can drop us a line at southsudan@voanews.com or find us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Jua konia, jua konia.